This is Kelly Henderson, and you're listening to the Velvet's Edge podcast. This week on the podcast, my guest is singer-songwriter Joy Williams. I had never met Joy before this interview, but immediately upon meeting her, I felt like I had known her for a million years. And because of that, our conversation was incredibly raw and open. We talked about music, of course, but I also wanted to hear about life experiences from Joy. She is mostly known for her part in the duo The Civil Wars, so we talked about that experience and, of course, demise of that band, what she learned about herself through that process, and how you pick up and start again after seeing your dreams realized and then broken. She also told me her top three career moments, including her matching tattoo with Adele. No big deal. Here's my new friend, Joy. I'm here with Joy Williams. I feel like we're fast friends.
We just met. We just literally sat down and off to the races we went, didn't we?
Yeah, interior design. We covered a lot of things.
I know. And your glasses right now today are matching the wall that I now am asking about paint colors about. So
I'm feeling very on brand today. Okay, so most people probably do know you from The Civil Wars, wouldn't you say?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, or that girl from The Civil Wars.
That girl,
yeah.
Right. Yeah. How did that go? Because you had a huge career before and now after.
Well, it's an interesting thing that a lot of people don't know, that I started in faith-based music when I was 17.
Yeah.
So most people do know me from, you know, when I was in my like mid to late 20s in this Americana folk duo, but before I was singing songs that were like super pop and like very churchy. And I was raised in a pretty conservative way growing up. I grew up in Northern California most of my life, which was an odd combo to like grow up in Santa Cruz County and then grow up in a really conservative household.
Yeah. I do not associate the two.
No, neither do I. And I grew up in it, but somehow I think it played into everything else that's happened, you know, moving forward. It brought like this openness and this curiosity about, you know, what does life look like in the juxtaposition of like how all of these things work together to form us into who we are. But I left doing that kind of music when I was 23.
Okay.
Just felt like I was feeling really hemmed in and my worldview was shifting and deepening in a different way. And I didn't know what I was going to do. I mean, I sat on my couch for a good solid several months and it's like, what? I started at 17.
So young.
I mean,
most people are graduating high school.
Yeah. And I did, but back and forth, like flying, recording my album.
Yeah.
My senior year. And then just like trying to get to volleyball practice on time. So it was like an interesting way to grow. But once I moved to Nashville on my own at 18, I had no idea what lay ahead. So it was lots of trial and error, and I was on the road like 250 days my first year.
At 18?
At 18, on a bus full of bros. Let me just say, I don't recommend that.
That's but like, you learn welcome fast. To the music industry.
Totally. I mean, you learn really, really quickly how to hold your ground and stay with yourself. And it was really fun. Some of it was really great. But by the time I got to The Civil Wars, you know, I'd already been in the industry several years,
right?
You know, almost a decade. And so it was funny when people would say there, it's like it was an overnight success, you know, like, and it's like, hold up, that took some time. You know, it's like small hinges on a really large door. I'd spent a lot of time being on the road, meeting people, learning how to write songs and craft those, and it was so good. It was such a great learning experience for me personally and professionally. It was really painful in some ways too, but I've learned the importance of staying with myself and what happens when I don't, and how important it is to trust my instincts.
Yeah.
And to not be afraid to speak up when that needs to happen. And I think we as women, women and men, I shouldn't just say women, but I think women and men somehow at different points in time, we get cultured to think that we can't speak up when we need to, when we really ought to. And so I learned that kind of the hard way. But I will say that I got to do like bucket list experiences, you know, meeting Paul McCartney and like hanging out. I mean, the list could go on and on and on about the things that I'd always hoped to do in my career, working my ass off to get to that spot and finally experiencing that was really awesome. And then I describe it as a little bit like seeing the backside of Disney World, that it's really exciting. And then you turn around and you go, okay, there's a lot more to life than just this as well. You work really, really hard to get to a certain place, and then you see it and you go, oh, wait, there's more. And not more stuff or like more accolades to get, but it means there's more in life to look at what really matters to you and why. And that taught me, that era taught me that in a really stark way.
Wow. That's a huge part. The owning yourself, I think, is huge. But if you started at 17, don't you feel like you had to learn that pretty fast?
Oh, geez. I mean, yeah. And what a weird way to like learn about yourself while people clap for you every night.
Right.
That can really tweak with your brain. And I don't say that as like, wah, wah. I mean, that's not like Cry Me a River. It just was what it was. It was how I grew up. But it was really good that when I left doing music in that way at that age, that I had a lot of time. I mean, I didn't know what I was going to do. I hadn't finished college. I didn't even go. I mean, I graduated valedictorian from my high school and didn't go to college because I already had this career.
How did you graduate valedictorian if you're like going back and forth doing music too?
I am a nerd.
Are you really fucking smart?
I am a nerd. I am a nerd.
Wow.
I don't know what makes someone smart or not, but I was a kid that was like, oh, let me see if I can do that. Let me see if I can do that. Yeah. Let me try that. I think I can do that. And at the time I was like that kid that just really always wanted the gold star.
Yeah.
And I think some of that was helpful and some of that wasn't, you know. I laugh that I've been a recovering perfectionist.
Same.
Yeah. Still. I can tell.
You can.
I can. Well, it takes one to
How
know
do you
one.
Tell?
It takes one to know one.
You just met me.
I know, but but also it sitting down with you, I can tell you're very kind, and I can also tell you're probably really hard on yourself.
Exactly.
So
are you very empathetic?
I am. I am. You are too.
Yeah.
So
you feel it.
Yeah, I do. And that's why it'd probably be fun if you and I had a cocktail afterwards, because we'd probably, it's a little early in the day,
but
not now, but yeah, I mean, I think it's life finds a way to hand you your own ass.
Yeah.
And to remind you and to remind you that it's not about doing things perfectly. It's about showing up to the best of your ability with your heart and your integrity intact. And that will get challenged as we grow, you know, and mistakes happen. And that's the part that's, what is that? There's like a Japanese art where basically it's, and you would probably know it, it's that you take a bowl and you let it drop and it breaks into a million pieces, and you solder it back in the exact same form that it is, but with gold or with some kind of precious metal. And basically it becomes that much more valuable because it broke.
So the gold goes into the cracks.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow. That is awesome.
So I think that's kind of like life.
I love that. Wow.
I can't remember the term for it. Maybe I'm not that much of a nerd now that I can't remember it.
So did kids make fun of you in school when you would go do the music stuff?
I feel like high school kids
are so hard. Oh, it was secret.
No, I basically didn't talk about it because I was afraid of getting made fun
of. Yeah.
And I didn't know how it was going to go either. I mean, it was like, this is going to work out. So I don't
know. You
didn't
put it out there yet.
Yeah, and I was too busy doing other things. I mean, I was, in my school, student council was cool, you know?
Yeah. So you were probably president.
Guilty,
I can tell.
Yes, but I will say I'm gonna say that my best friend Ashley Graham, shout out to Ashley, was the one that did
like
everything.
The model Ashley Graham?
No.
Oh.
Although that would be interesting.
This just took a turn.
Yeah, that was sweet. I look back at life and I think how hard I was trying.
Oh yeah.
I was trying so hard. And I think this era of my life, and even Front Porch kind of has the representation of what does it look like. And my mom, that was a total fragment sentence. What does it look like to not try so hard? And that's what my mom said to me a few years ago. She said, the thing with you, Joy, is you don't need to try harder. You need to try less. And that really stuck with me because after my dad passed away, and this is all in the same era of like having a small child, my dad passing away from cancer, and my duo imploding, in part because I spoke up, it just leveled everything for me. And I thought, you know, Venus was kind of a representation of what it looks like for me to exert. it was like, I wanted to explore. I wanted to push the boundaries. How can I do this? What am I capable of? And I am really proud of that record, but that record was such a sonic departure from the Civil Wars that a lot of people were like, what the hell is she doing?
Which record are you talking about?
Venus was the solo album that came after the last Civil Wars record. And that was on Columbia Records. And a lot of people don't know about it.
Yeah.
And that's okay. But it was almost like I needed to cleanse my palate and be like, okay, that was, I'm capable of making that music, but what does it look like to really love what I do and do what I love? And I just started, I just went back to playing with the guitar, you know, and singing and just telling a story. And that's how Front Porch came about. And it just felt so much more like me.
Mm-hmm.
And so much less about proving a point, because I had somebody in a at a record label, a very prominent person, like high up in the company at the time, tell me, "Well, no one really wants to hear you unless you're standing next to a man."
Oh, these are hitting on so many points that I want to ask you
about.
Yeah,
go ahead. I'm sorry, I'm like blah blah blah.
No, I'm just so curious. I mean, we obviously, so you did start in Christian music, mm-hmm. and then you took a break.
Yeah. And then I did music for TV film.
Which, okay, let's talk a little bit about that.
Yeah.
Do you feel like when you do things like that, obviously the paychecks are great.
Yes, they can be.
They can be.
Or they used to be more than they are now.
Exactly. And then sometimes it becomes this, you know, this niche for people.
Mm-hmm.
But did you as a musician, a serious musician at that point, feel like a sellout ever? Or did you get any shit for that?
It was a form of function. It was like a way for me to create and provide for myself and and my family. And it didn't feel like selling out because I honestly, because I'd been doing Christian music, it to me was a really safe sort of lily pad leap into, it was a little bit more in the background. So I could create that music, and I got shit for having transferred out of making like faith-based music.
Oh, really?
Oh yeah. I mean, and that's okay. That's fine.
Yeah.
It happens. But,
are you still religious?
I would say that my spirituality has deepened and widened. That's what I would say.
Deep and wide. That's a Christian song.
Deep and wide. Deep and wide. You know it.
Oh, I got it.
Yeah. I think if we really get down to it, there's a lot that we can all agree on.
Yeah.
If we really got past some of the picket fences that we put up.
So maybe more spirituality.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I do very much feel like it's important to have a true north, you know, and to do no harm. I think that's really important. But what were we talking about?
So you were saying that you got out of the Christian or the faith-based.
Yeah. And that to do TV film. Yeah, that's mm-hmm. what you were asking about. It didn't feel like a sellout. It felt like, can I still do music if I don't have these parameters set for me? So it actually worked out really well. Like I wrote a bunch of things that went on Grey's Anatomy and, you know.
Oh my God, back in the heyday too.
It was.
I loved Grey's Anatomy.
Didn't we all? and then I randomly wrote a single that became a jingle for Oscar Mayer.
I read about that.
like who'd have thought that the money for deli meat would become the seedbed for financially funding independently what would become the Civil Wars?
Wow.
That at the time, my husband and I like took that money and we put it into the Civil Wars. And then it was the little engine that could, and we worked our asses off. And I'm so grateful that it did work.
Yeah.
Until it didn't. And then as all things do, there's a season for all those things.
Totally.
And now this is the season that I'm in again of, you know, making solo music and not afraid to go back to the roots and the sheer simplicity of writing just with a guitar and a vocal. And I did that when I was 18. I did that when I was 23. I did that when I was 27. I did that, you know, and I'm still doing that. And I'm not afraid to now, what do the Buddhists say? Include and transcend. Like to bring all those, I'm like on Front Porch, you've got some spiritual language, but I'm kind of turning it on its ear a little bit. It's like a little bit of a wry grin on some of it. And then I'm not afraid to go back to that rootsy aspect of writing, like when I wrote in the Civil Wars. It was mostly just John Paul and I writing. So the contribution that I put into that, I think I was afraid to own that at a certain point mm-hmm. in time. And I'm not afraid to do that anymore because I am really proud of the music that we made.
But don't you think, I mean, because you guys did meet at a writing, was it a conference?
Yeah, it was like a writing camp.
Yeah.
Yeah, and for another artist.
Do you have that thing where you, especially in a partnership, I personally struggle with this sometimes. I think the other person, even though I'm bringing the same thing to the table, mm-hmm. I think for some reason they know better or mm-hmm. what they're saying is right. And I start to question myself. Did yeah. you do that in that relationship?
Oh, man. Yes.
That's a woman thing too, I think a little bit, maybe.
I think we've been cultured out. Uh-huh. I think I remember someone saying at a certain point that men are cultured out of their hearts and women are cultured out of their bodies.
Wow.
And I wept actually when I heard that, because it just hit me like a ton of bricks.
Mm-hmm.
Because, well, I think we all have moments where we go, man, if I'd only just remembered my worth and my value.
Totally.
I would have responded so differently in that moment. I would have had less regrets. I would have maybe said that more clearly. There's this book, have you read it? By Clarissa Estes, and she's mm-hmm. a PhD. And it's called Women Who Run With the Wolves. And it's all these stories from around the world that, and she talks about the history of each of those stories and how it correlates to women and what we've been cultured out of and what we have within us at any point in time if we need it. To me, I'm like, it should be required reading.
Oh my gosh. I'm going to have to re-listen to this podcast so I can remember. I need to start taking notes.
No. Well, I'm taking notes on the artist that's on your wall right now. But I think that book in particular, I mean, she's 10 months old today. I have a 10-month-old daughter right now. And I think to myself, I really want to make sure that I ingest this,
yeah,
the wisdom of this and the wisdom from my mom and the wisdom that I'm getting so I can pass it down to her and hopefully she can feel the shift within her to trust her instincts more. What happened for you? Like when you said you felt like you kind of have been sort of cultured to sort of defer. And I was too. I totally was too. There's lots of moments where I'm like, well, surely they must know more than me.
Totally.
And I go, it says who?
Well, that's what I'm learning the older I get is everyone's just trying to figure it out all the time. None of us really know.
No. And if anyone says they do you kind of, I sometimes question it now.
100%. Because I just know that's not true. You know, I think it's like when you're growing up and you look at your parents and you just think they know what they're doing because they're your parents.
Yep.
They don't have a clue.
No, they were just doing the best they could
too. Exactly. And I think that's what I'm realizing is that's okay to wake up every day and not have every answer. Like mm-hmm. I just put so much pressure on myself to know.
Yeah.
And if I don't know, then I'm just wrong or dumb or, mm-hmm. you know, like I get those kind of messages in my head.
Yeah, in your head, like that's the ticker tape that starts like playing for you.
And what I've noticed about a lot of men is either they cover it better or they don't go to that. Mm-hmm. They think if I don't know, they'll figure it out or they'll find out, but they don't ever judge themselves.
Yeah, there's less shame about it.
Mm-hmm.
We need a dude in here to ask. We need a dude in here to ask what they
we'll
think
have
to about
phone
that.
A friend later.
Phone a friend. Phone a friend.
But so okay, I want to go back to what you said. That person. I was about to say that man said to you.
Oh yeah.
But that person said to you about you singing next to. Can you repeat what they said?
No one wants to hear you unless you're standing next to a man.
How did you respond?
I walked 25 blocks in New York in the snow.
Did you believe it though?
I think that's why I walked 25 blocks.
Yeah.
It's because a part of me knew that was totally bullshit. And the other part of me thought, what if he's right?
It's like all your worst fears being said out
yes.
loud.
Yes. Who wants to hear that you basically don't matter unless you're connected to someone else? What a painful thing that is. And it's not true. Mm-hmm. But I didn't know how to respond at the time. I remember saying, I don't agree. Because I thought, if I snap back, then I don't even need to entertain that. And if I snap back, then I'm sort of, I'm reacting instead of responding.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't even want to give that thought any more power than it felt like a punch to the stomach. And I have to keep reminding myself that some people may think that, and that's okay, but I'm not going to waste any more time thinking about that. What can I do now? And who can I be now? And what kind of woman can I be where I can make my kids proud, where I can make my, you know, I can show my 6.5-year-old son Miles and my my infant daughter, I can show them what does it look like to be honest and real and show up and make mistakes and own them and apologize and try again and stay creative and stay curious and kind if I can. Because otherwise I would just spend the rest of my life trying to prove everybody wrong. Mm-hmm. And who wants to do that? That's a lot of wasted energy, I think.
What did you learn? What are the differences between standing on stage with someone else and standing on stage by yourself?
If it doesn't work, you can only blame yourself.
Yeah.
But the other thing is that I've had people ask me, does it feel so different now being a solo artist versus being in a duo? And I say, no, not really, because I still bring what I bring. And I love to collaborate. That's one of my sweet spots. I've always done that. Whether I was a solo artist collaborating with a producer or collaborating with a band leader, even now, you know, when I was making this record, Kenneth Pattingale from a duo called the Milk Carton Kids, you know, he knew the nature of and the importance of collaborating. And that was one of the reasons why I wanted to work with him, was because he knew how important repartee is. And even on the road with my band, you know, it was a three-piece, you know, upright bass and guitar and fiddle / mando. And I thought to myself, I am a solo artist, but I don't feel like I'm boss lady.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like we're all rowing the boat together. And I know how to lead. And I know how to do that in a way that's hopefully kind and respectful, because that's how I want to be treated. But I'm still collaborating. I'm still linking arms and going, I couldn't do this without you guys. I wouldn't want to.
Right.
So, you know, I'm learning that's one of my strengths, is working with other people. And I don't have to feel weak or less because of that.
So when you guys, because obviously you had some great success.
You talk about the Civil Wars?
The Civil Wars, yeah. Yes. And you guys were pretty much at the height of what seemed like your career, and you just announced that the tour was canceled.
Yeah.
You were breaking up. It was done.
Yep.
I was listening to Bobby interview on the Bobby cast, Bobby Bones.
Who? He's new.
Yeah.
Just kidding.
That guy. But this was one of my favorite things you said was, you were talking about the bad press that you got after that. And you said, when everything you've been working for falls apart and you're still standing, you just realize it's going to be okay.
Yeah.
So what was that like? Can you talk me through that? Because I imagine that if I'd been working so hard for something and it's finally happening, mm-hmm. I mean, you said you've been doing music since you were 17.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden it's happening and then it's just not. Mm-hmm. And you're also being beat up for it.
Mm-hmm. And misunderstood.
Yeah. What does that feel
without
like?
Without the ability to defend yourself,
yeah.
Frankly. What does it feel like?
Yeah.
Total like ego annihilation.
Okay.
It feels like when you walk into the grocery store and you see somebody that, you know, 4 weeks ago would have been walking right up to you and chatting you up, now glares at you and walks right past you like they don't even know you.
Wow.
And you go, you know, this might be kind of a version of my worst nightmare, but I'm still breathing. And you really do get back to the basics of, what am I really grateful for? I'm grateful I get to wake up in a bed in a house that is warm. And what am I grateful for? That my worth and value is not determined on other people's opinions of me. And that I get to walk this out in my own life, and that's on me. And I don't know, you realize you take what you do seriously, but you don't take yourself too seriously. And you go, okay, at a certain point, this will pass and people will be less vitriolic about it.
Mm-hmm.
And to have compassion, because if people don't really know, then that all they have are their opinions and their assumptions. And because it involves other people, I don't feel like to publicly speak about that would do much good.
Yeah.
So I have to stay with that. And that is hard some days, because it's just hard. But I think to myself, it's about moving forward and not looking back. And, you know, I learned a lot. There's things I would have done differently. There's things I wouldn't have done differently. And that's all life is, I think.
That's what I was going to ask you. If you would go back, would you do it all again?
I don't know. I mean, you have, it's like, what's that movie, Sliding Doors, you know?
Oh yeah.
It's like, well, if I didn't do that, then this wouldn't have happened. And then exactly. This wouldn't have happened. So I can say there are moments that I go, man, I wish I would have, remembered my backbone more. But ultimately, it's brought me right here sitting down with you.
And would you have even realized that if you hadn't gone through that stuff?
No, probably not. I think suffering can be a great teacher until it's not necessary.
Yeah.
So I don't know. What do you think? Like, you looking back at your life, if I asked you that same question, what would you say?
I love that you turn interviews.
It's not but a I'll tactic answer. And we're just having a conversation.
When you were initially just talking, I was thinking there was a moment in my life where I also realized, like, that statement, I'm a human being, not a human doing.
Yeah.
And that was for me after a huge fall as well. And just realizing, like, I can't really control things in this life. I can only control how I act, how I treat people, what I show up and do every day. And knowing that that's not my worth. So once I realized that, I think it's completely shifted the way that I respond to anything in life, you know? I don't think that I would go back and change it, though. As painful as all of that stuff has been, I don't think that I could be this person.
No, because it was transformative, mm-hmm. It sounds like. Yeah. Same.
Yeah.
Same.
So it's worth it. So when you did finally get to the place where you were like, I'm still standing, mm-hmm. I'm still okay, what was the next step? How did you pick back up and do music again?
Very slowly.
Yeah.
Very, very slowly. So. It's like falling off a horse. You know what I mean? You like, so you get close to the animal again, you're like, ooh, your whole body memory's like, you know, what's going to happen? And you confront your fears. You become friends with your fears. And the great thing about writing music is that I get to kind of exercise those demons. And I wrote 80 songs.
Like 80?
Mm-hmm, for Venus. I wrote 80 songs.
How many actually made the album?
Only, what was it? I mean, with a couple extra bonus things. I mean, it was like 12 or 14.
Wow.
But with Front Porch, I was very slow and steady on that. I kept the steady as she goes kind of model.
Yeah.
And I was less, I moved to LA after the Civil Wars ended. It was just like, I just got to get out of town. So, we had a place by the beach and, I just took my son to the ocean and worked on music when I could and, you know, randomly worked on other projects with other people. Mm. And that was a good thing for me to do at the time. And I was closer to my dad at the time because he was in Northern California really, really sick. So I could just like do work. And then when dad called, I could pop up and just be with him while he slowly kind of passed through the veil. But I like moved out of town. But you bring, wherever you go, there you are.
Oh, I know. So, can't escape yourself, right?
Nope. But like, I think that was, once my dad passed away, I was like, why am I in LA? I don't really want to be here. Mm-hmm. Like, it's great. And it's just, it was just like, schools aren't great. I was starting to look at that for miles. And,
yeah.
You know, and community, I felt like it was harder to grow out there. Everyone's just hustling.
All the time.
All the damn time. So we got back to Nashville and I was like, I'm home. And I think that really played a part into Front Porch and just really, really beginning to settle back in and not settle for something, but to settle back into just like you said, the human, the being part versus mm-hmm. the doing part. And so when I wrote this time around, I waited for the people that I wanted to work with. It wasn't like, okay, who's available? How can I get this done? Like, what can I, blah, blah, blah. I was like, no, I really want to write with. And it was a really small tribe of people. So I just waited until their calendars opened up and mine worked in between, you know, dropping Miles off at school and, you know, the regular everyday errands of being a mom and sat down and wrote.
What a blessing. Don't you think a lot of times for me, I know everyone's like, oh, your job is so cool. But in any creative job or thing that you make a job, it ends up becoming a business. You know, you're chasing the money or you're chasing a schedule or there's all these other demands. So what a cool experience to get to wait.
Yeah.
And do it how you want to do it.
Yeah. I mean, I do feel like that was a really big gift. And it helped me just kind of calm down. Mm-hmm. It calmed my nerves. And I thought, you know, if I wanted to make money, I probably wouldn't do music.
Right.
You know, but why do I do this? You know, I do this because I love the nature of making something that hopefully can connect with someone else, and that maybe someone else can feel a little less alone because of that. And we can all remember how connected we are. And it's like, to me, music is like cooking. It's fun to cook for yourself, but it's way more fun to cook for other people and invite them in and share that. And if they enjoy it and it nourishes them, then it's like, that just feels even better to me. So it was sort of like, how do I want to cook? What kind of meal do I want to cook this time? And it just slowly came together. And I was writing about what was going on in my life, going through hard times, coming through, realizing what really matters in life. And what really doesn't, and what does it look like to, you know, fight for yourself and fight for love and celebrate the high times and acknowledge the low times and not be afraid to show up for both.
I was going to ask that, how much of what you write is reflective of what's happening in your life?
Oh, so much, but it's so much also in the sense of it can be what was happening in my life when I was having a conversation with one of my good friends, you know,
right?
Like Trouble with Wanting is a song that is, you know, we can all relate to the feeling, the ache of desire, or the thought of like the what if ... question mark kind of stuff. But that was from a conversation I had with one of my really good friends about her on again, off again relationship for 10 years. And then like a song called Hotel Saint Cecilia on the record. It was just kind of, I saw this elderly woman sitting alone in a bar, and she wasn't like, she looked very lovely and put together. It wasn't like this sad state of affairs, you know, but I just thought, I wonder what her story is. And mm-hmm. I made one up and wrote that. And, but a lot of it is directly autobiographical, like a song called Preacher's Daughter, of that every single line is directly from my life.
Because you grew up.
I grew up a pastor's daughter.
Yeah.
So it's all in there. It's the movie is in there. The movie in my mind is in there.
Yeah.
And then the ordinary everyday parts of my life are in there. Like the front porch, you know, that currently has a howdy welcome mat on it. And, you know, a couple Razor scooters and a bike that's all banged up and, you know, sidewalk chalk on it. And that's also my real life too.
Yeah. I've always been so envious of songwriters because it seems like such a therapeutic process. I'm like, you guys don't have to pay for what we have to pay for.
Oh no, Lord. Oh no. I swear to you, I've bought several therapists, like apartments, with the amount of therapy I've been to. Heyo. It is good. It's good therapy.
Yeah.
It is good therapy. And then it also can be like, if you're not careful, it can be like intense navel gazing.
What do you mean?
It can just be like, this is what I've gone through and I can write 10 songs about it. So it's like,
so it could get really dark.
Yeah. So I tell my son all the time, you've got to become friends with your feelings. Otherwise they'll come out sideways.
So true.
So
wow.
It's like learning to make friends with your feelings also allows us to communicate more clearly and hopefully write better songs.
Feelings are just feelings.
Yeah. And they're important to acknowledge.
Yep.
And they're important not to necessarily camp there for like decades at a time. And life is hard. Like I'm in a season right now that I never thought that I would have to be in, that I never wanted to be in. And yet this is where I am.
Yeah.
And I've got beautiful music in the midst of all of this. And I have two amazing kids. And I think I'm going to be okay.
That just made me think of my favorite song on the album, All I Need. I've been listening to that on repeat. Mm. And that also reminds me, that is kind of you coming full circle, because there's a lot of spirituality in that, mm-hmm. you know?
Mm-hmm.
Such a beautiful, simple song, but not simple to downplay.
No. I'm glad it feels that way.
Statements are just like, oh yeah.
Yeah. Hopefully it reminds us of like the elemental aspects of life.
Exactly.
You know,
the basics that we need to remember.
Yeah.
So we've talked about your kids a little bit.
Yeah.
So tell me, you have two kids.
I do.
How old?
Miles will be 7 very soon.
Okay.
He's so awesome.
Is that a fun age?
It is.
Yeah.
He's so full of life and so full of curiosity. He has so much energy. I mean, there's moments I'm like, I mean, he wakes up and it's just like
ready to go.
Yeah. He just wakes up on a green light. That's just how it goes. And
you're like, I need some coffee.
I know, I'm like, Mom, I need coffee. But he just came out such a light. He's just never lost that twinkle in his eye, and he's so deeply empathic as well. So he's got all that sort of like classic, you know, some might say boy energy. I don't necessarily know if it's engendered or not. It doesn't need to be, but he's so very much in his body.
Yeah.
And yet also so very much in his heart. And he's just such a rad human being, and he teaches me a lot. And then this wonderful bliss ball, Poppy.
I have a friend with a kid named Poppy.
Really?
A little girl. Yeah. So cute. I love that name.
I do too. We named her Poppy because her ETA when we found out we were pregnant was my late dad's birthday.
Oh.
And I just thought that's a little full circle right there. And the grandkids all called him Poppy.
What a cool story.
So she was born, she had her own birthday, which I like. She was born one day before my dad's birthday. Wow. And I like to think he was cheering her on. So we named her Poppy.
I love that.
Yeah.
So how do you balance this career? Because obviously, you know, road life, traveling, you're following your dreams, but you have these two kids at home. What is that like?
I mean, my dreams get folded into the deep and absolute privilege of parenting. Like that, everything changes. Everything changes when you have a baby.
What do you mean? Tell me more.
Well, you never realized how much time you had on your hands until you had a kid.
That's what everyone tells me.
And then you have two, and I'm so grateful for it. But all your priorities shift. You know, it's not just about like, what can I accomplish? What can I do? Now it's like, how do I do this in a way where my kids know that I'm there for them all the time? Mm-hmm. How do I do this in a way that provides for them? And I think I became less precious, and I mean that in a good way, about the music that I make. It was more of like, I just sat on a stool pregnant and sick AF,
really,
recording front porch. I was early pregnant and I don't have like that unicorns and rainbows pregnancies. Like I'm like, what is that? Like, you know, like, the Duchess of, you know, like Kate, you know, she was sick like 24 hours for 6 or 7 months, like up all the way through. I was that way.
Ugh.
And so, but I sat down in a studio and I was like, this is time to create, because I knew it was going to keep me really, really, honest in how I made what I made. And it did. I think you can hear that on front porch. You can hear that there's no striving. I'm literally just sitting down singing. And you know, parenting in general makes you go, okay, what really needs to happen versus what do I just want to happen? And somehow I think it all works together and it's a tension. When people say, how do you balance it? I'm like, ain't no such thing.
Yeah.
Like in this regard, I'm constantly moving. I'm constantly altering. I'm constantly shifting. Like, how do I take care of myself so that I can take really good care of the kids? And I probably don't do that well a lot, but at least I'm able to say it. And
I thought it.
Yeah. And say, this isn't about doing this perfectly. Again, getting back to that whole thing. It's about, how can I do this with bravery and kindness and show up for the people that I love? I'll let you know if I figure it out. You let me know, and then you can write a book and make a bajillion dollars, okay, and then Oprah will interview you, and then I will like buy tickets to your seminars, and you know, it'll be a whole thing. It'll be a whole Brené Brown thing.
Oh my God, you're speaking my language.
Who I really want to be friends with.
Same. Her and Oprah would be, I mean, that people talk about who they would want to meet. I'm like, those are my people. Oh,
I would like to be adopted by Michelle Obama and Oprah and Brené Brown. And there's so many names. Who else?
I love Glennon Doyle.
Yeah.
I mean, all of those women.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Anybody that's been on Oprah Super Soul Sunday, basically.
That's so good.
All of them.
Oh, my word. This guy named Richard Rohr was just talking with Oprah. And I love Richard Rohr has been a part of kind of what changed a bit of my sort of walk in regards to like what I believe.
Yeah.
It was, I think we go through this, I don't know, anybody who grew up in a conservative household, the temptation might be to just completely deconstruct and just like leave it in 1,000 pieces. And I was like that for a long time. But this guy named Richard Rohr, he's a Franciscan monk who has a center in New Mexico called the CAC, the Center for Action and Contemplation. And he wrote this book called Everything Belongs. And it was like my first step back into like, oh, wait, maybe I don't need to throw it all out. And it was a pretty cool path. And then he got interviewed by Oprah. I'm like, see?
If you get interviewed by Oprah, you're doing something right though, you know? That is like literal goals
totally,
of life.
Totally.
That is interesting though about your spirituality, because I feel the same way. It's like I grew up in a really Christian conservative home, mm-hmm. and I don't necessarily practice those same beliefs, but mm-hmm. I do think it never leaves you. It might, for me, it's just expanded mm-hmm. a lot mm-hmm. and life has just, I don't know. I just see everything with a bigger perspective now than I used to.
Yeah. I just think there's so many walls. Why are there so many walls? Like if we could take those walls down, I think we really get back to the basics, which I think most teachers in the world, that's what everyone's trying to remind us of, you know. But to each their own.
Front Porch is out. Mm-hmm. It came out in May.
Yep, it did.
What was your favorite part of recording that album?
Oh, man. I just never had so much fun recording in a studio. And that's saying a lot because, like I mentioned, I was mm-hmm. really, really dog sick. Mm-hmm. And I've been in studios for many, many years. But working with Kenneth as a co-producer was really special. And then the way in which we went about it just felt really, really good. I mean, Kenneth was like, okay, I said, I want to record this record in the most unadulterated way possible, meaning like I don't want overdubs. So there's no overdubs on the record. Wow. It's literally just like front to back performances. And I've always said, if you can't do it in one take, you probably shouldn't try and do it live.
Wow. Yeah, that's a great point.
That's just for me. That's just how I feel about me.
Yeah.
And so the Civil Wars was that way. And then also recording this was that way too. So there was just so much ease involved and a lot of laughter. And Kenneth, really listened when I said, this is what I want to do and how. And the players, I didn't know who the players were going to be, but Kenneth heard me when I said, everybody that we bring in, I just need them to be empathic listeners. Because I don't want them to come in and just like slap their stuff on it. Like, this is how I play. This is what I do. Everybody that came in, we really set the tone of, we want this to be like we're cooking together, you know? Then and let's add what we can, but less is more. So how do we do this?
Yeah.
And playing simply is actually really quite hard to do. But the amazing talent on the record, it speaks for itself. Mm-hmm. Got Russ Paul and Scott Mulvihill and Caitlin Canty on some background vocals and John Mylander on fiddle and Anthony DaCosta on guitar.
So are these all Nashville people?
Not all, but they are now.
Yeah.
But everyone, came from a different part of the country and live here now. But it was, to Kenneth's credit, Kenneth was saying, I really think you and Anthony, the guitar player, you guys should just rehearse for two months.
Yeah.
And we did. Anthony just came to my house and we rehearsed for 2 months straight on green velvet couches in my living room. And Kenneth would sit there and we'd play it through and we'd work out harmonies. And so that when we got in the studio, it was just like press record and let's go.
Yeah. I read, was it 5 days?
Yeah. 15 songs in 5 days.
It
was just so easy. It was so easy.
That's crazy though.
It was crazy, but it was crazy easy. And I'd never experienced it to that degree. I just felt like there was some really special magic by way of the hard work leading up to it.
Yeah.
The
preparation.
It really was just so joyful in there. It just felt really, the ease was there. It felt like sitting on a front porch with friends. And that was the whole impetus for starting the record. When I sat down with songwriters, I said, what's really coming to me is if I can't play it on a front porch, it's probably not for me. Hmm. And I remember Liz Rose, who helped me write, and Emily Shackleton helped me write Front Porch. She was like, well, have you written a song with that title yet? And I was like, no. She's like, well, don't you think we should do that?
Like,
yes.
If it was a snake, it would have bit you.
True. I'd be dead.
So the album is out. You guys should totally check it out. I was going to say, it's funny that you keep comparing the cooking mm-hmm. stuff, because I've been cooking in my house listening to this
you
album.
Have? Yes.
Yes. It's the perfect like background music for home to me because it's so calming. I don't know. I just have, I've felt the last 3 days I've been listening, and it's definitely a very calming, contemplative mm-hmm. album. Like I hear something different every time.
Oh, cool.
In the lyrics. Yeah. Which has been really exciting.
Makes me happy.
Okay. What have your greatest career moments been that you would say? I know that's like the hardest thing, but I'm curious because I feel like you've covered so many bases.
Sheesh.
Give me like top three.
Meeting Paul McCartney and saying he was a fan.
He said he was a fan?
Yes, my God. Did you die? I wanted to die.
Oh,
I died.
God. That's
it's only, it's all downhill from there. You know what I'm saying? I'm like, shit.
Right.
Yeah, that.
That one's good.
Getting matching tattoos with Adele.
Can you tell that story?
Yeah, we went the Civil Wars. She discovered the music of the Civil Wars and asked us to come on the road with her,
which is amazing to you.
Yeah.
Adele.
Oh my gosh.
God.
We became fast friends on the road, and I got to witness what it looks like to go from being somewhat well known to like the skyrocket, like stratospheric fame, and just to watch her stay the same. And to just bear witness to the human aspect of all of that too. And, I was not even close to having any kids at that point. So P.S. do not try and keep up drinking with Adele.
Did she throw down?
Yeah, it was, but we joke now that like, we're moms now. We can't even, yeah. We can't do that.
You have one drink and you're like, whoa.
Yeah, I know. I'm like, ooh, that one really hit me. I'm going to be up at 6 and that one's going to hurt.
Yeah.
The half glass of wine that I had, but I think getting to go on the road with her, it was really just a special thing and getting to know her. And,
what's the tattoo?
The tattoo is three dots.
Okay.
It's an ellipsis, which just means to be continued.
And, oh, that's cool.
And it's on our wrists. And we finished the tour, that leg of the tour. We finished that leg of the tour, and she had arranged for a tattoo artist on the bus. So we went on the bus after the end of tour. She had ironically given me a bottle of gin, which I had gotten terribly, terribly sick from drinking.
Mm.
So that was a little giggle. And, and it was both of our first tattoos.
Oh, wow.
And now we think that it's, I don't know. I haven't spoken to her in a little bit, but I look down and I think to myself, that's right. Everything is to be continued. You keep an open mind about what's about to happen. You know, you never know how life is going to move, but you just keep remembering there's always more. There's always more to be continued, like our friendship. And
yeah.
And then we both wound up having, like, getting pregnant around the same time, just totally randomly. So we've joked at times that it's, you know, it's like us two and our son.
It's like connected, you guys.
Yeah. But, and then now I don't know if I need to add a fourth dot, but then that wouldn't work out for Poppy. But it wouldn't be an ellipsis. So that one. And then top three, I think... It's hard. It's like I go back and forth between like really small moments of stepping out on stage and just that moment that happens of feeling this deep circle of gratitude that I feel. Like I feel like it's like, no, thank you for being here. And then it's like this moment of like feeling that thank you. And it's like, no, thank you. And it's like, thank you.
Yeah.
That to me, that's a really small but really impacting thing for me every time that I...
I was going to say, you feel that every show?
I do. And some days I'm really tired, or some days my throat hurts. Or
you're pregnant.
Yeah. Some days I'm pregnant. And some days I'm so exhausted. I don't know how I'm going to hit that high note for that one song. And, but it's like sitting down in a living room.
Yeah.
You know, and just being like, I'm so glad you're here. And if you can keep that conversation going and just be who you are, it's not putting on a show. I mean, I do like putting on a show, but I think... The shows I love going to the most are the shows where I feel like people really bring themselves. They bring the drama and they bring themselves. And like that to me is a highlight to the career, that hopefully I can keep that feeling of gratitude going always. I mean, Dolly Parton still has so much gratitude for her career. Yeah. Like, she's a queen to me forever and a day. And I think of Emmylou Harris, who was never afraid to branch out and try new things and is still making music decades and decades later. Like, those aren't even personal highlights for me, but I look at that and I go, no, that's a highlight I want to aspire to.
Right.
What about you?
Oh God, greatest career moments. I mean, I think there's been people I've gotten to meet or just even be around, like Emmylou Harris and all of those things that have been great for me. But I think lately the thing that I would say that's kind of hitting me the most is with gratitude is just, even though I don't know what I'm doing with a lot of the stuff I'm doing, the opportunities keep presenting themselves.
That's awesome.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Where it's just like one foot in front of the other and something is opening up and I just know I'm exactly where I'm supposed to be.
This is Kelly Henderson and you've been listening to the Velvet's Edge podcast. I truly believe that every one of us has a little velvet and a little edge. So it's so important to remember that to be strong, you must be soft too. Thank you so much for sharing in those stories with me. You can follow Velvet's Edge on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter, as well as velvetsedge.com. If you haven't yet, go to Apple Podcasts and subscribe, rate, and review this podcast. Join me every Wednesday for more conversations on lifestyle, beauty, and relationships. My thanks to Joy Williams. Her album Front Porch is out everywhere now. Thanks for listening.